702. Change your mindset.
Indeed, that's what this feature is called, Change Your Mindset. And I'm joined now by author and consultant at Change Creator SA, together with Stanley Beckett, together with Dr. Shireen Glenn-Spiron, clinical psychologist and CEO and owner of UniHealth in Namibia, to talk about the wellness revolution. Stanley Beckett, thank you so much for joining me this evening. Are you well?
Good evening, Aubrey. Yes, yes, good to hear from you, and good evening to our listeners, and good evening to Shireen as well.
Let me greet Dr. Shireen Glenn-Spiron once more. Shireen, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me on your show, Aubrey. Always looking forward to have interesting and fruitful discussions.
Let's talk about this idea of a wellness revolution, Shireen, and how far it has gone. We started this conversation last year about the workspace and how companies, both private and public sector companies, can be instrumental in making sure that there is greater psychological or mental wellness in the workplace. Talk to us about that, please, will you, Shireen?
Yes, Aubrey, you know, the wellness sector for a very long time have also been kind of misconstrued as something that relates to people doing, you know, a day out, a function, or, you know, on the other hand, maybe having a team building exercise, or, you know, those who eventually really need to have a clinical intervention to have a clinical intervention. But there is no middle way. And I think it's time for us to start looking at how we can address, and I almost don't want to call it wellness. I want to call it health, you know, finding health solutions. Because, you know, we're disillusioned if we think that wellness is purely something we do for, you know, because we have to do it in our company. It's almost like, you know, in order for me to make sure my employees, my employees are happy. So I'm going to have like a wellness day. We're going to do a few, you know, primary healthcare assessments. So we'll check your cholesterol and, you know, we'll check your sugar levels and off you go. And we've done our bit, you know, and next year we're going to all have a nice team building exercise and tick, there you go. And we really need to start moving away from that mindset because people are struggling. You know, people are adapted and have been adapting to this burnout culture that we've created, this lack of personal boundaries when it comes to our workspace. And unfortunately, the companies have all fallen into this toxic culture. You know, there are very few companies who will, for example, ask their employees to set boundaries, you know, and when we look at that, when we look at how much pressure people are under at the moment, you know, and we've said this last year, not only the consequences of having to go through COVID and, you know, this abnormal adaptability that people had to go through, but just, you know, in terms of the economy, in terms of South Africa with the load shedding, you know, companies themselves struggling in terms of their revenue structures and income at the moment. There's a huge crisis that's looming, and we need to start addressing it as such and not looking at it as a tick box exercise where we can just say, we've done X, Y, and Z, off you go.
I had the unfortunate encounter last week with a listener of the show, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to tell her story next week at some point, Shireen. A former employee of one of our bigger parastatals who lost her job at that parastatal because of disagreements that ultimately led to mental problems, I suppose. And one of the things that was said to her was that you don't look like you have a mental wellness situation because you don't look like it. You present well. Perhaps we also need an opportunity to teach companies as to the levels of sensitivities that they need to have when people complain about certain things, when they are unhappy in certain scenarios in the workspace. That perhaps it's not just a tick box exercise. These are real mental health issues where people are actually breaking down But because companies themselves haven't really taken the time to understand the sensitivity and the reality of this particular situation, there is this particular tick box exercise that happens where they'll probably win a case in a court of law, but it hasn't necessarily addressed the problem.
Yeah, what you're saying, Aubrey, is so true. You know, we need to start by looking firstly and formally at educating people, because the more we understand of the dynamics of what, you know, something like burnout looks like, also what a mental health condition looks like, and also what we can do as a company in terms of adjusting our culture, you know, the more we have awareness, the more we can start addressing these sort of situations, you know, more effectively. At the moment, what's happening is people are waiting until, like that specific colleague you're talking about, you know, or the individual that you know. We're waiting until they eventually fall apart, and then we have to take action. So at that point in time, the company has one of two options. So the one is if they have a very good employee wellness program and they've got support structures in place, they can always refer into those support structures. But if they don't, it normally ends up in a dismissal, you know.
Yeah. And that's exactly what's happening here.
Yeah, and unfortunately for that individual, you know, had they been more of a proactive approach to supporting that individual, had there been assessment tools, and these days, you know, one of the things that we really want to push through this wellness revolution is saying that we need to proactively start assisting people to do self-screening, and self-screening on mental health on a daily basis or at least on a weekly basis, so that they can also have an idea that they're heading towards a burnout. Because not only does companies not recognize this within their employees, but the employees don't recognize this within themselves, you know. And when we get to that point where the company recognizes this and the individual starts acting out, we're already at a lost case scenario, you know. We're already at the two options.
Yeah.
You know, either a severe and clinical intervention, which could potentially, you know, remedy the situation, or dismissal.
Stanley, I've had a conversation with you about this particular listener, and I'm hoping that we will be able to facilitate a means by which we can have this conversation on air, because I think it speaks directly to the issues that you are trying to raise with this wellness revolution that you're on. Tell us what your thoughts are about how we actually get this revolution going.
Yeah, Aubrey, so I'm hoping to have her on the air with us, as you said, next week, because I think she represents, as you said, what the problem is out there. And it's really good to have at least one example people can identify with. And I'd like to hear what Shireen has to say about this as well. But I wanted to share with you, when we talk about wellness revolution, let's quickly talk about a little bit about what we're talking about here, Aubrey, is we're saying what needs to change. No, we're not just talking about a change that needs to take place over a long time. We're talking about a revolution, something that needs to happen right now. And the first thing is, and Shireen said that really, really well in the beginning. She said, we need to stop making wellness in our organizations just a tick box exercise. The second thing that needs to change is that we need to realize that it's the responsibility of both the business and the employee. You see, at the moment, Aubrey, you've got two sides pointing fingers at each other. Mm. The employees saying that the problem is with the business, and the business is saying that the problem is with the employee. It's and they're both right and they're both wrong. So it's not a me problem, it's a we problem. And then the third thing that needs to happen is, and this is the big one, we need to start seriously including mental health in our wellness programs, in our health programs. And I'm going to mention to you just four reasons quickly why businesses don't do this, Aubrey. And this is what we're here to speak about tonight, is that we can help businesses with all of these things, but we need to start talking about it. So why wouldn't a business take this mental health problem seriously? Firstly, because I think they don't realize how widespread the problem actually is. You know, we don't realize how many people are suffering from this at the moment. And here's the thing, is because we don't even realize that we ourselves are suffering from it. I read something that somebody said. Now, they're busy interviewing retired people, and they said a common thing that's coming out from retired people who are retiring early because they're forced to, they said, I didn't realize how messed up my mental health was
until I retired early and started on my journey of healing myself. We're so much in this rut that people don't realize how serious the problem is. The second reason why businesses aren't doing enough about this is because they don't know what to do about it. The problem is has spread so fast since COVID that it's become such a big problem that businesses are stuck. They don't know what to do with it. The third reason is that they fear that it will lead to even more absenteeism, that people will come up and say, I have mental health issues, or I'm exhausted. I'm taking a few months off. But actually, we're saying no. We're saying if you address the problem, it's going to lead to less absenteeism. And then the third thing is that businesses feel we cannot afford it. How do we afford to take care of all our people? And we're saying there is a way, and that's really what we're talking about tonight. So tonight, to all businesses and people in businesses out there, we are saying that there is a real problem, that we realize it's spreading fast, but you can do something about it. It's not going to increase absenteeism. If you do something about it, it's actually going to decrease absenteeism, and it is affordable. And I was hoping that Shireen could maybe speak about those things more, along how we believe we can solve those problems.
I know that I need to let Shireen go a little earlier today because of other commitments that she has. But Shireen, let me ask you to deal with that briefly. There is the reality that the reason why I have a business, right, is to be able to have production of the core business of my business. And while I may sympathize with this conversation about the fact that there are real incidents of mental ill health in life, in my business. But, you know, this business is not here to come and entertain issues about mental health, about the fact that people are not well, as true and as real as this phenomenon is. I'm here to run a business. We've got deadlines in a very competitive place. If more and more people come and say, I have mental illness issues, and we all accept that this is a real thing, and half my staff says so, what's going to happen to the main reason why we have this business? That's a real fear, isn't it?
Aubrey, absolutely. And I think, you know, when you speak to the CEOs of different companies, they will tell you the most important thing for that company is to make money. Now, it sounds a little bit sort of heartless or unempathetic. Like you say, it's almost like, you know, we don't really care about our employees, but that's not true. Because if a company is not making money, the basic principle is we cannot pay your salary, you know? So the focus of the company needs to be, it needs to be able to be sustainable. It needs to be able to look after itself. But we also have to remember, and you mentioned it just now, that our staff members are the core and the heart of also making a company work and making it successful. So they're the engines, you know, that drives this vehicle into success. And if we don't look after that engine, if we don't look after our human capital, then inevitably our company won't be successful. You know, if you have such a high staff turnover, you know, you can't retain your people. People are constantly burned out. You know, training people, teaching new skills to people who has eventually decided I'm resigning because I can't take this anymore. You know, it actually sets your company back so far if you have to keep on doing that. So the way that Stan and myself, you know, and other people that work within the industries, and I'm talking about both the mental health, the life coaching, the wellness industries, employee wellness program industries, HR communities, really looking after employee wellness. The way that we see it is the companies need to start looking at this from a tiered perspective. And when I say tiered, we have to look at the different levels of where the company can engage. So your first level, Aubrey, again, like you mentioned, would be educating not only the employees, but also the employer, you know, like making sure that management is aligned with what is the company ethics, what are the company values, how do we set boundaries within the company, within individual spaces, you know, how do we handle things like burnout, what are our policies around mental health concerns, how do we address it? So that would be your first level. Next to that, you know, we look at the employees who are still well enough to be able to look after themselves. And at present, you know, we still have about 60 to 70% of our employees that should be able to manage if they've got good coping skills, if they've got good invested support structures for them, whether it is through technology, which we also advocate for because we can manage our resources much better, or whether it is through other forms of networks, you know, and self-assessment tools that they can utilize. A lot of the employees can actually look after themselves. So once we start building these structures, the next level then would be to keep the focus of assisting people who really need it to the minimum, so that that group of people gets the, you know, the interventions that they truly also deserve to get. Because remember, becoming mentally unhealthy is not a choice. You know, people don't wake up one morning and decide, I'm going to be depressed. You know, I'm going to develop anxiety or have panic attacks. So the people who really need that intense support, they need to be supported. And if companies start layering it better, if we start being proactive by looking after our employees who are well, you know, or those who are struggling just a little bit, we can actually prevent them to fall into the category where we have chaos and we have 60% of our workers and our employees not in a good enough space. And I think that's where once we start adapting to that sort of thought process, we can really do a lot more within the corporate wellness space.
I know that there are people listening right now to this conversation who are themselves employers, perhaps people in the HR space. In other words, people that look after the human capital in large companies are listening right now. I'd love to take calls from you, right? I'd like to take calls from owners of businesses, small and big. Perhaps even people that are listening to us right now who are DGs in government departments, in SOEs. And Stanley, what I'm going to say now is, again, going to sound a little insensitive, right? But I imagine that that is what companies are contending with. And how would you answer this question? So I've asked it, but I want to reiterate the question to get a little more grip on what you are proposing as far as this wellness revolution is concerned. Sure, I love my employees and they are the backbone of this company and I need them. I need them to be healthy because when they are healthy, they are productive. And if they are productive, then the company is successful and meets its goals. And we make money and we are able to employ people and the economy is able to move on. Sure, I hear all of that stuff. But this conversation sounds to me as a business owner, as a HR person, as a whatever the case may be, but as the leader of this organization, that the responsibility of issues other than the core business issues of this company are now my problem, right? I hear you and I'm trying to be as sensitive as possible, but frankly, I'd rather dismiss somebody than have to go through the schlep of wellness programs because I just don't have the time. Neither is my orientation about that. I've got a business to run and I've got to make money so that other people who don't have perhaps those mental wellness problems can continue to have a job and feed their families. I hear all of the sensitivity and I hear all of the lovey-dovey stuff. But I'm sorry, mine is not to be worrying about that stuff. I've got a business to run here and to meet targets and the bottom line. How do you respond to that, Stanley? I know I'm sounding a little bit insensitive, but I'm trying to drive the point home so that we can have a solution to this question that business leaders would probably have.
Yeah, and when you say you're sounding insensitive, you know what you're sounding like, Aubrey? You're sounding like a business leader that's burnt out himself. right? Because that's exactly what business leaders are saying, but that's because they are burnt out themselves. One of the stages of being burnt out and exhausted is that you become synonistic towards the people you work with. And you say, but why should, well, nobody's looking after me. Well, who's looking, just get out there, do your job. You know, that's what I'm paying you for. That's the insensitivity we're talking about. And I want to say that in some ways I agree with you, Aubrey, is that it costs a lot of money. And I'm sure Shireen will agree with this as well, which is why we're talking about the wellness revolution. It costs a lot of money to fix people who are broken. So let's not use the word broken. Let's use the word, it's much more easier to buy something new, right, than to try and fix something that's broken. So in other words, people who might have some of these mental health issues or might be burnt out, yes, it might cost a lot of money and a lot of production time to get these people the assistance they need. But yes, the truth of the matter is, what if that wasn't needed? That's what we're saying. So number one, we're saying that it doesn't have to be, the prices don't have to be that high if we know what we're doing and we start using technology and we start all helping each other. In other words, it becomes a business, it becomes a we problem, not a me problem. It becomes a we problem. We all say, what can we do together to support each other? But number two, this is really the message that Shireen and myself are driving. And I don't want to speak on her behalf. I'd like to hear what she says as well. But I'm driving it, especially from my side, Aubrey, is that prevention is going to cost you far less than trying to fix the problem down the line. And what we're saying about the revolution is about, and that's exactly what Shireen said earlier on, she says it's time for us to be proactive so that we don't have to deal with these cases when people are completely burned out. That's our exact message. Why are we waiting until people are burned out completely and saying, but now how do we fix the problem? Shouldn't we rather be saying, let's create environments from both sides, both organization side and from the employee side, environment, and start creating habits in our lives, start creating the way we do things around you. That's what the business should say. This is how we do things around you. Look at Google and those companies that have done this so well. People work long hours, but they're not burnt out because workload is only one of the things. So it's like saying, why don't we create an environment where people are less likely to burn out, then we don't have to deal with those big problems of now I have to replace the person, now I have to send them for all this expensive therapy, for example. So yes, there will always be those cases. But I think what we're advocating tonight, and my message to a leader that says this, would be this is not a problem that's going to go away. This is a problem that's going to severely influence your business. But we're saying, why don't we work together and find a way to lessen the amount of people that get to that stage and rather prevent that from happening in the first place?
Shireen, I'm going to take your last comment because I know you need to go, but what do you say to the business leader, the business owner that is speaking as I speak about the fact that mental wellness is a big topic in the world at the moment because it's real, right? I think that there are very few people that would argue about the urgency and the reality of the issues of mental wellness in the world, but also in the company, right? And how is it that this revolution that you guys are talking about seems to be wanting to make it the responsibility of the companies more so than the health system of the country, more so than the individual themselves? The owners of these companies, the leaders of industry, are probably going to say, this feels like there is yet another responsibility being placed on us, when in fact we signed up for making companies work and to make economies work. How do you respond to that complaint as I let you go from a clinical point of view? For this whole argument,
Aubrey, you know, and I think something that speaks to people who are in charge are statistics, you know, and if we look at the research and we go into what happens in organizations, you know, where there is presenteeism, where there's absenteeism, you know, where people are obviously not retained and they have to retrain, re-educate new people coming into the companies. Your company, in terms of your success rate, in terms of your own turnover and revenue, it goes down, you know, and inevitably it affects your company negatively. And what we're saying is that, yes, we understand mental health is real. We're not saying that 100% of your employees would need to have this form of intervention. But you would have to start being, you know, proactive in your approach to looking after the well-being of your employees. And no, by no means is this purely, as Stanley has mentioned, a company problem. This needs to be a shared responsibility. We also know that in South Africa, you know, particularly, we can't carry, or the government can't carry the burden of more people losing their jobs. You know, the economy can't carry that. Yeah. So if people start losing their jobs, then we're also driving the economy down, you know, because then people can't spend money because they don't have money to spend. Sure. So, you know, this whole cycle is, it's not about an individual. It's not about an individual company. When we look after, you know, our employees are able to look after their families. Those families are community members who then build communities, and those communities drive our economy. So as much as we want to deny the fact that it might be one or two people who are burned out, it's not. You know, if we don't address it in time, it will spiral. You know, we've seen it. It's increasing. Yeah. We do a lot of corporate wellness work, both in Namibia and South Africa. The amount of people taking up, you know, counseling sessions, joining workshops, etc., you know, doing self-assessments, it has really quadrupled in the last year. And the reason for that is that people are really not coping. You know, there are so much going on, financial stresses, et cetera, et cetera. And if we don't start proactively looking at this, you can tell me anything about profitability in your company. And I completely understand, you know, as they say, cash flow is very important. But we will not have cash flow, because the more people who become unemployed, burned out, you know, unable to work, the more companies will close down, the more we will actually turn down our own economy.
So very quickly, as I let you go, Shireen, here's a message coming through on WhatsApp line. The listener didn't give me their name. Says, I'm sitting with a case I won, which the company is reviewing. They claim I want to enrich myself. I suffered depression as a result of a toxic working environment. My psychologist wrote reports to HR, and they even wanted the EAP to see me. The HR director influenced the EAP to ignore me. I left the job. And it's very similar to the story that I'm hoping Stanley will facilitate next week with the listener that I was talking to during the week. The antagonistic sort of relationship that seems to exist between employees and employers, the I won the case, the fight, I would imagine is part of the problem. This us and them kind of non-collaborative, antagonistic relationship is part of the problem, as I let you go, Shireen?
Absolutely, Aubrey. And I think that's why it's, you know, it is extremely important for us to start working, you know, with both the employer and the employee. Because if the employee has enough support, if the employee has enough skills, you know, opportunities for them to actually learn how to cope with these difficult mental situations, you know, it starts as a little bit of irritability and aggression, or, you know, non-compliance in the workplace. And then eventually this person goes into burnout and nothing's been done about it. And then they end up becoming clinically depressed. And I mean, again, I want to reinforce that people need to understand this is not a choice that employee is making, you know. This is something that happens over time, and it's something that it is preventable. If we are proactive, we can actually prevent this person from spiraling to that point where now it's costing both the employee and the employer, because you can imagine how much the employers are spending also annually on these cases, you know, having to board someone, having to go to labor court consistently. They spend thousands and thousands per employee to try and win these cases. So are you really winning is the question. You know, are we really gaining that much if we end up in court, you know, after somebody has been declared, you know, depressed, or somebody had suffered from panic attacks or some other mental health condition? Are we winning the battle? What battle are we fighting? We have to ask ourselves, because at the end of the day, it's also costing you more. You now need to replace that person. You need to retrain someone else. You need to go to court. You need to go to labor, whatever the case might be. But it's costing the companies a lot of money. And all of this can be prevented if we start working and taking responsibility, both the employer and the employee.
Dr. Shireen Glenn-Spiron, clinical psychologist and CEO at UniHealth, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Appreciate your time. How do people get in touch with you?
They can go to our website. It's www.unihealth.com.na. And on the website, they can make a booking or also an appointment to speak to one of our consultants.
Thank you so much for your time. Stanley, before I take a break, I want to perhaps ask you this question that says, you've been talking about it's an us problem. It's not a you problem. It's not a me problem. It's an us problem. And the reality is that we do lack that collaborative approach to dealing with mental unwellness in companies or in work environments. How, in your strategy, do we get that collaborative atmosphere going? I mean, the conversation we'll have next week and the message we've just received now from a listener who says that they were, she was in a toxic working environment. The environment was untenable until she had to leave the work environment. She doesn't have an income anymore. The company doesn't have a particularly productive worker in her. How do we foster, and is it part of your strategy? How do we foster a more collaborative reality in this space where we're talking about this wellness revolution?
Yeah, so Aubrey, I don't know if you want me to answer this question now or after the break.
Maybe let's do that. Let's take the break. And then when I come back, please, I'd love to hear from leaders of industry, owners of companies, HR practitioners. How do you feel about the reality of mental challenges that are as a result of a toxic working environment? How do you feel about the reality that, yes, we all acknowledge the reality of mental unwellness in the workspace, but it has now become a bit of a tick box exercise? How do we get rid of this situation where people are antagonistic towards each other? How do we create this wellness? How do we create a situation where you as business leaders don't feel like you are bearing the brunt of this responsibility alone? How do we get you to feel like you are part of a collective so that we can effectively deal with mental unwellness in the workspace? I'm really looking forward to this. As I take a break, please give us a call. 011-883-0702. Straight after
702. Change your mindset.
Stanley Beckett is my guest, and thank you very much to Dr. Shireen Glenn-Spiron as we talk about a wellness revolution. Stanley, how do you respond to that question prior to the break?
So just to remind me the question again, because I didn't hear it all. So maybe just remind me quickly, and then I'll respond to it, Aubrey.
So I'm talking to the issue that you keep raising, that it's not my problem or your problem. It's a collaborative effort, and very, very often employees suffer in silence about this matter because, one, there's the shame, and that's caused by the stigma around mental illness and the fact that we still haven't put our minds around the fact that this is a real thing. But it is. I suppose companies get that it's a real thing. But companies are also not talking openly about their fears because they don't want to look like they are insensitive. And so it creates this acrimony. It creates this constant clashing of interests. And my sense is that you're saying that we need to be collaborative in the way that we deal with this. Talk to that and exactly what are the mechanics of that.
Yeah, so what you need here, Aubrey, now remember exactly what I wanted to share with you, is you have to have a system, and it has to be a planned system that needs to be followed through and measured. Because my belief, and this is really what the bottom line statement and the biggest value and understanding that we have from a change creator system, is that if you cannot measure, you cannot improve.
So you cannot, if you do not have a system with which to measure, then you cannot measure. So you have to have a system, and that system has to include everybody, in from the organization, from the CEO right to the person working that's opening the doors every morning, for example, of the company. Everybody needs to be involved. So you need to understand some basic principles. You need to understand the science behind it, the research. You need to understand the psychology behind it. You also need to understand the psychology of change. Why do people change, and why would people change? What is the resistance to change, and what would make an organization or a group of people committed to it? So all of these things need to be measured along the way, and that's something we've been working on for such a long time now, is to understand first the ontology of change, why people change, why people don't change, but then also to understand the technology that's needed to be able to run a system like this. So I would say that the first step, and this, we have it as a four-step process, Aubrey, the very first step is probably the most important step that sort of addresses, the first and second step, everything you've been saying so far in leading up to your question. The first and second step is awareness and acceptance. There needs to be an awareness creation process from the top right down, as Shireen said earlier on, from the management to the CEO of the company, to the exco of the company, to the HR people in the company. Everybody needs to have a proper understanding of what the real challenges is and how to identify it. But then there also needs to be a level of acceptance. In other words, the business needs to accept what their role in the problem is. And in the same way, every employee needs to accept what their role is. Only once those two steps are properly followed through, and that's why it can only be done systematically, right? Then you can move to step three and four, which is a commitment towards the change and then taking action. But those first two steps, if we don't have a proper system that guides us towards understanding how to do those, I think that we're going to be stuck. And I think that's where a lot of businesses are right now. They don't know what those first two steps are.
Mapula is in Pretoria. Good evening to you, Mapula.
Good evening, Aubrey.
Yeah.
And your guest. You know, I wanted to comment about two things. Firstly, I find that sometimes management themselves are not competent in terms of supporting employees who need help, you know, when they have issues. And then they themselves find that it's hard for them to say they're not coping, because as management, you almost are expected to be, you know, I mean, showing that you are coping under extreme pressure, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes they themselves, management, cannot even cope.
Yeah.
To even raise their hands to say, I'm not coping.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the second point I want to make is that sometimes referring people for counseling, it's almost a step within the process of wanting to discipline people. So then it's almost like seen as a tick, you know, tick box to say, yes, I referred the person for EAP. Yes, the person did go, or they refused to go. Therefore, when I go to the CCMA, I have a case to say I did refer people to go for counseling.
Yeah.
So therefore, sometimes you find that employees would be reluctant to even go for EAP help, even though they see that they need help, because they have the fear that they might be seen as, I'm now going to be going towards that very process of, yes, ultimately I was pushed to go for counseling.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I'll be dismissed.
Here's a question for you, Mapula, I'm really wanting to hear your opinion. Should it be the responsibility of management to solve these problems?
Which problem?
The problems of mental ill health of employees.
It's a dual responsibility, Aubrey.
Yeah.
One, management needs to provide the support and the resources for employees to go on to get help.
Why shouldn't they? And I know I'm being facetious. I'm really trying to get the rationale. Why don't they just fire the person and get a new one? I mean, you know.
You know, Aubrey, a person in a workspace is a whole person. It's a holistic and, you know, approach.
Yeah.
They cannot be seen as just but a tool that would be used to come.
So the answer would be a moral one. It would be one that says that it's the moral thing to do.
It's the moral thing to do, and it's a good practice in terms of people management.
Mapula in Pretoria, thank you so much for your call. Much appreciated. Linda is in Diepkloof, Soweto. Hi, Linda.
Intellectual giant.
Hey, intellectual giant. How are you?
I'm good, Traoré.
Hey,
how are you?
Man, I'm good. Go ahead, sir. What's on your mind?
Yes, what you are talking about with Stanley is part and parcel of what we've been discussing with Think and Grow Rich. There's a chapter on chapter 7, organized planning. I think it's page 156. They talk about two types of leadership. The first leadership is the one that takes things by force in a way of dictating things. And the second leadership is where there's a new brand of leadership in the business and industry where the employer and the employee have a mutual cooperation. So it is part and parcel of everything you say. I don't know if I'm making sense.
No, you are. You're making a lot of sense, Linda.
I've experienced something like this where we as employees were going through immense conditions, and we decided to sign a petition, and there was 100 of us, and we sat down with the HR and the head of communications talking about the conditions that we're living under. But the employers were more focused on the commercial side of things rather than the condition side of things on our side. And you could see that there's just a huge gap, you know. We don't have any legal
office. I hear you.
What do you call this? Labor offices, right?
HR, human rights, human resources centers?
No. Remember in the past, we used to have officer, like a labor, how can I say this? Looking for a couple of words. A compliance office, sort of like a labor compliance office.
Right.
Labor inspector.
Right.
That's the word I'm looking for. We don't have those anymore, Aubrey. And this is why we are suffering in South Africa. I think those people have been put under the carpet. So that's just my comment for today.
Linda in Diepkloof, Soweto. Giriboni is in Attridgeville. Hi, Giriboni. Hello, Giriboni.
Okay, how are you, sir?
Very good, thank you.
For example,
Hello, Giriboni.
I've been following your show for a long time now.
Hello, Giriboni. Sorry, I lost you there for a second. You're saying that you want to give an example to say what?
A bad example.
Yes.
I used to follow your show religiously when you were hosting from midnight to 4 before they shifted to this lot.
Yes.
And there was a guy who used to call you and complain that he was in the defense force and blah, 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 blah. And you used to say that you are not in a position to help him because he needs a therapist. Remember?
Yeah.
Let me cut the long story short. Yeah?
Sure.
Yeah, the guy was suffering from mental illness. Okay, as we speak now, the guy is dead because I happen to live in the guy's community. He was burned alive in his shack by community members in Tshwanguve. If we expect the employers and others to take responsibility, it must be the government that will take responsibilities. Because the government is ignoring the problem. The communities around Tshwanguve and Mamelodi are taking advantage. Burning these people alive, calling them witches and whatever, while they know that they have mental illnesses. Thank you, sir.
Giriboni in Attridgeville, thanks very much. Didn't really get the full understanding of what Giriboni was referring to. Stanley, as we close, your last word.
Now, my final word is, Aubrey, you know, I'm just thinking, leave this as a thought for anyone that's thinking that. your question was, why don't we just, if the people get burnt out, just replace them with new people? Because it'll be too expensive. An example would be, it would be like having a car and only driving it in first gear as hard as you want and driving it until the engine packs up and then saying, okay, let's get a new car. The answer isn't to keep buying a new car. The answer is to manage the way you drive
and maintain the car.
And if people can get... if people can get that analogy, then that will be the answer they need to that question. Maintain your people, and it will cost you so much less than trying to replace them.
The reason why I play devil's advocate in that way, Stanley, is because I'm highlighting the fact that perhaps part of the reason why mental wellness as a function in companies is a tick box exercise is because maybe companies haven't broken into that very understanding that actually – you get greater longevity out of your car if you maintain it. You get you get better economics out of that process than simply going for the option that says, "Ah, we'll just replace the car, or we'll just replace the tires when they happen." How do people get in touch with you, please, Stanley? I'm already late.
Yeah, they can just look on our website, changecreatorsa.com, and at the bottom they can leave their details if they need to get hold of us, changecreatorsa.com.